This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Here we go. It's hour number three of the G-Bag Nation, and we are now 3 hours from USA and Canada, the Four Nations final coming at you. We're going to have the play-by-play here for you right here on 105.3 The Fan. Had to do a lot of hard work behind the scenes, so salute to the hockey hawk, Gavin Spittle, for getting that done. And we're excited to have the presentation of that game. Now, how close is USA hockey to Canada hockey? I think for my entire lifetime, people have just considered it a non-starter. You know, not quite as big as the gap in soccer from the USA to Europe and South America, but substantial. Here's Eric Chiafalo with the latest on that development.
Yeah, this is like another country taking our football away from us. And yeah, all of a sudden now it's like, oh, whoa, the NFL might not be the best football league going in the world? Are you kidding me? That would be a bad day for our country. So I saw this this blog from my favorite hockey blogger, Mr. Jordy, and he laid some context out that I think is pretty nice, because we keep referring back to the 1980 stuff and the miracle and how, you know, people are tying this back to that.
Yes.
And I thought he brought some really good context to what tonight actually means and what it is sort of the culmination of for Team USA brought us.
Yeah, but they've The United States has covered a lot of ground in the junior hockey stuff.
Exactly.
That's okay. Is that where you're going with this?
Yeah, that's
okay,
that's certainly a part of it.
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking that, like, you know, the more you kind of read into it, you're thinking, like, wait a minute, the U.S., when it comes to these junior tournaments, have done a really fine work the last several times out.
Yeah, he says in 1980, the U.S. team had absolutely no business going up against the Soviets and knocking off the greatest hockey powerhouse in the world. But 45 years later, here in 2025, this USA team is not an underdog. This isn't going to be some miraculous story about a ragtag bunch of kids shocking the world and winning one of the most shocking games ever. You have Stanley Cup champions on Team USA, first overall picks. You have 60-plus goal scorers. You have Vezina winners. And, of course, you have the two biggest lunatics in the sport right now, in the Tkachuk bros. So they're going to bring the extra violence and emotion to this game. But it's been a decade since we've actually gotten to see some true best-on-best matchups between the United States and Canada. And over the past 10 years, like you mentioned, Broadus, we've seen USA start to dominate at the junior level. They've won back-to-back World Juniors golds and have won three out of the last five. You have a couple gold medals at the U18 World Championships. Everyone could see the United States quickly now closing the gap on Canada in terms of dominance. And the Four Nations face-off is really, it's the first event we actually get to see it all happen and come to fruition. So many of these guys on Team USA grew up playing through the National Development Program. These guys have all seen and felt how quickly that they have been closing the gap on Canada, and just in terms of development and stuff like that. And, you know, guys aren't leaving to go play junior in Canada anymore. And so just as all these guys were getting to the age where they would be able to represent the U.S. at the Olympics, the NHL stopped allowing their players to go over and compete. So these guys have been waiting their whole lives to represent the USA at the highest level, and now they finally have their chance. So I think it's even you, and then you add the layer of the anthem stuff and the political stuff. But I think even despite that, this Team USA has been hungry to prove, hey, we have closed the gap. And because they haven't gotten to showcase that at the Olympics, they haven't really gotten to prove it. Yeah. So you've had to just kind of mind your business about it and defer, have deference to Canada, who has reigned hockey forever. But now this tournament, and especially tonight, is the chance to really prove, no, we've been now for the last decade plus, we've been inching closer and closer, and now the time is ours to take that hockey baton forever.
Yeah, you feel like it's a team of destiny, and that can be very powerful at that point. Where has that narrative formed then that Canada is just better? Like even going into the first game?
Yeah, I think that's
maybe they have the better two or three overall players.
Yes, I think when you look at the rosters, you kind of end up leaning Canada. Of course, the goaltender for Team USA is the best on the planet, so that's a huge advantage for Team USA. But yeah, I think it's just general deference to Canada because that's what it's always been. And now as we get closer to it and it's becoming the spectacle that it is, and it's like the number one sports story right now, and that's the perfect thing. Like you have this at a time where what is it really competing against? Nothing. Everybody's going all in. You have people that aren't hockey people going, dude, this is a moment. You mix in a little patriotism, high stakes, and nothing else to compete with it. Boom, let's go all in and treat this like a Thursday night sports night for the ages.
Yeah, yeah. I could see, you know, that sort of emotion having such an impact on this game. Either it carries you to victory or you get excited and overconfident and start to think like it's already happened and you go out there and fall on your face. I can't wait for 7 o'clock.
Yeah, same here. And he gives three reasons to be confident in Team USA. We mentioned having the best goalie on the planet. And then he says that they're due to get some contributions from at least a few of their top weapons in Austin Matthews, Jack Hughes, and Kyle Connor. If just one or two of those guys can find a way to get themselves going tonight in a way that they weren't able to on Saturday, then that could really be the difference in this game.
So the U.S. hasn't beat Canada in a best-on-best tournament final series.
That's
since
why
the 1996 World Cup of hockey.
Yeah, they've won. Canada's won four of the last five tournaments they've had. If you go back, you look at the Salt Lake Games, Vancouver Olympics, the Sochi Olympics, the World Cup of hockey in 16. I mean, they've won nine of the last 13 involving NHL players going back to 1976, the Canadian Cup. So yeah, you wonder why Canada walks around with their chest out and, you know, as that this hockey power when it comes to these things, the numbers will tell you that. The tournament wins will tell you that. You know, they just haven't had a lot of success here lately in Stanley Cups. A lot of those have been, you know, won by teams over in North America here.
You know, and then you could talk about what might happen as a result of the excitement around this. And even though it's not an Olympics, it's starting to take on an Olympic type of feel. Players and coaches are saying they want the game to have an impact on fans and players in the U.S. like the Miracle on Ice did in 1980. That probably started the chain of events that allowed us to reach the point that we have now. It's staggering how long that has been, 45 years, almost a half century, you know, and maybe it'll take that long or even longer to bridge the gap in the U.S. But U.S. coach Mike Sullivan says that event in U.S. hockey inspired a generation of players, my generation. I think this group that we have in our dressing room have an opportunity to do that and inspire the next generation, and I think they recognize that. I mean, at that point, 1980, hockey was a distant fantasy here in the great state of Texas, and now you have hockey rinks popping up all over the place, and everybody has somebody in your social circle whose kid is fanatical about, you know, playing junior hockey or, you know, continuing along that amateur development path. Mike Madonna has a great point on why this game has this interest and level of feel to it. The first one happened in Montreal. Tonight's game happens in Boston. A lot of these showdowns are on a completely other part of the world. It says the people in Boston are brutal. They're going to be loud and rude and crude. It's going to be a crazy scene. It's hard to duplicate that when you're overseas. There's a time change. You don't really have a home crowd. So this does certainly make for good television. I can't imagine the energy that's going to be in that barn tonight.
Yeah, it will be the thing that, you know, we talk about the goaltending and stuff like that, but these turn into winner take all games. If you do go back, and I was doing some research on this stuff, if Jordan Binnington, the Canadian goalie, he has won a game 7 in Boston to take the cup. So he has that winner take all experience where your goalie doesn't have that. So even in that building, you know, if you want to look for things as Canada, go back to the 2019 Stanley Cup final, and you get a situation where he was the netminder that night for the Blues to beat the Bruins in that building in a game seven. So at least he has those kinds of thoughts going into this match.
And Canada's Bennington, he gave up two goals third period Monday night.
Yeah.
You know, and for whatever reason, their coach is staying with them. I guess they don't have a better option. Obviously, super talented guy. But I feel like in moments like this, if it was an NHL game, they'd say you always bet on the hot goaltender.
Yes, especially when he's the best on the planet.
Well, that's John Cooper is the Canadian coach. He's the Tampa Bay Lightning's coach, and my man has got some Stanley Cup rings to his credit as well. This has got to be completely, you know, a gut feeling here that hey, we're going to ride this thing through. Their plan was we're going to ride it through, and Jordan Bennington is going to be our guy. But you're right though. If you start to be a little bit of like we say leaky in goal, you know that could play to the U.S. advantage. But U.S. did a great job with. Last time out with their it's like I say, the number of hits that they were able to get, the dumping and then hitting, you know, that's
setting the tone, man.
Yeah, that's why I brought that up about the potentially of the Canadians giving up the puck because of all the forechecking, all the pressure that they were feeling, you know, that the Canadians were feeling. So it should be a hell of a game tonight. It really should be.
Yeah, and the patriotism is on the line here.
Yeah.
And so I know we're fired up about that notion, especially when you're kind of playing with house money, with like all the pressure on Canada here to remain at the top. And here was Paul Bissonnette on Pardon My Take talking about what type of crisis Canada is going to go into if they lose to USA tonight.
I would say for a week straight, everybody's going to argue about the lineup decisions. There will be conversations of blowing up Hockey Canada and restructuring the whole thing. There'll be dialogue about how youth hockey specifically is far too expensive, how much it is to rent ice, how much it is to buy equipment, how the common man has been weeded out. So it would be safe to say, yes, it would be a national emergency if we lose that game on Thursday.
I'm here for it, man. I want to see angry Canadians running around realizing that their number one thing, the thing that they care about most in life is now USA's.
Just a matter of time, right? As we have grown this sport tremendously well, it's become a Southern sport. Yeah. Like you're getting access to all of our best athletes, not just the hockey families that happen to live in a Northern state. Everybody's committed to this. And, you know, with our population advantage, with our resources advantage, you know, where America throws money at youth sports like nobody else, it was an eventuality.
We're doing a much better job of now building arenas or giving ice in these Southern states is like you talked about, you know, you think about winning Stanley Cups in Carolina, Florida, you know, with the Lightning and down with, you know, with the Panthers, you know, that you're now having a bigger commitment. It's kind of the commitment that we were hoping for like U.S. soccer, the willingness to, they keep building fields, but you're trying to develop talent, but we're starting to develop more of these hockey players because we're building more arenas or more areas to have ice time so these kids can all play.
All righty. It is the GBAC Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Play-by-play of this bad boy coming up at 7 o'clock tonight. It is a time now for Woolchuck's Top 10 at 4:20. Woolchuck doing the KMC Masterpiece with Hagee today.
Crushed it.
Majors is sick and Baskey was out, but we'll catch back up with Woolchuck. We have breaking news. Lucius, what's going down?
Why don't you guys probably look at the interwebs real quick here?
Oh my goodness, I love this. This is a fun moment.
Is it Zach
Martin?
Cowboy news,
Zach Martin
just refreshing our balls.
Oh, that's hitting.
Off. Yeah, Zach Martin. What's hitting with Zach Martin right now?
Yep. That's the text Brian showed me about 5 minutes ago. He's going to retire.
He's going to retire. Yeah,
that's surprising. You know, I thought Baltimore would be interested. I was reading today. Baltimore Ravens have interest. Kansas City Chiefs have interest.
Yeah,
you know, and if your projected value was in seven digits, it's not like they're asking him to take a massive pay cut. He could have got 10 plus million a year. He's like, nope, I'm good. We've kind of been getting that vibe from him for like the last 3 years that maybe when his contract was over, he'd be done. I never believed it. He was still really good in pass protection last year, even though he was playing compromised. He'd still be one of the best 15 or maybe even top 10 guards in the league.
Yeah, one of his best friends is Travis Frederick. And I think after he got injured, that he and Travis Frederick sat down and had a conversation. And I think it got emotional. I think it really got emotional for Zach that this could very well be the end. And, you know, he was kind of talking in a way, well, I don't know, I'm a free agent, we'll see. But I think that after that conversation with Travis, that he made a decision that he's likely was going to hang it up. And you know, his best friend kind of talked him through it, and he made the decision. So, yeah, it's a hell of a football player right there. You know, if you look at overall Hall of Fame guy one day, for
guarantee.
Sure, with the way that he played.
34 years old, would be 35 in the middle of next season. He's played 10 years. The injuries have stacked up on him, and he's made, according to Spotrac, I mean, $112 million in career earnings.
So, okay.
I mean, the need to play, unless you're just so still in love with the grind of football.
Yeah,
there's really no reason to.
There's a lot of pain involved, you know, and not just from the injuries that he sustained in recent years. And he was always great at playing through injuries.
Right. I love this, though, because I don't want, I mean, would it have been cool if he was able to remain healthy for another season and be able to go win a title somewhere, not named Philadelphia or Washington? Sure. But also, there was the opportunity to go out there, be injured, try to play, and be a shell of yourself. And you got glimpses of that for a good chunk of this past season. Do you want to go out being not the version that you remember yourself?
And you avoided like the catastrophic injuries that might impact the way that you walk for the rest of your life. And that can have impacts down the line, as I'm finding out, with your hip and your back. Like, he can still likely play with his grandkids in 15 or 20 years, or, you know, whenever that comes. So, hell of a career. And I love the fact he starts and ends with the Cowboys.
Yeah. Yes.
You always get an extra gold star on your resume when the career ends like that. Top 10 at 420 time, Chief. Where are you taking us?
Let's honor Luka with the greatest out-of-shape athletes in sports history.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, welcome back, Nation. Seven-time first-team All-Pro Zach Martin, NFL 2010's All-Decade Team, announcing his retirement from the National Football League. He's done. We just had that breaking news about 7 minutes ago. All right, so best of luck to Zach Martin and whatever he chooses to do. I was just getting ready for a story about, again, the Ravens having interest in him and, you know, the ability to maybe replace Trey Smith with Kansas City, but ultimately he decided he'd had enough. Pro Bowler in 9 of 10 seasons.
Holy cow, what a legend. That's got to be first ballot, right? First ballot Hall of Famer?
I'd say yeah.
I would say yes, for sure. Now we had a first ballot Jason Witten conversation the other day live from Hurtado doing some Love of the Star action. Me and Wolchuk felt like Jason Witten, Hall of Famer, yes. First ballot, probably not. But Broadus was crouch first, confident. Jason Witten, 82. He will be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I believe so. If you look at the NFL history and the number of receptions, and you start to look at the guys that are ahead of him, around him, every one of those players are Hall of Fame players. So I have a feeling that if you look at the position that he played, the Tony Gonzalez's, there's guys like, there's some great tight ends. But I think that Jason Witten is in that group. If you look at longevity, the number of receptions, the touchdowns, all those things, I think he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Segments brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car, truck, wreck, call Frankel and Frankel First, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Frankel and Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. It's time for Zach Wolchuk's Top 10 at 420. Here's the Chief.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Okay, 877-881-1053. In honor of Luca, we have the top 10 greatest out-of-shape athletes in sports history. This is pretty good. The Texas is already on fire with some really good candidates. I do want to note Zach Martin named first-team All-Pro 7 times in his career, tied with Hall of Famers Randall McDaniel and John Hanna for the most by any guards in NFL history.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So an absolute super beast. And we'll have a bigger Zach Martin conversation coming up in the finest here at the top of the hour. But let's go ahead and dive into the list today. And we're getting some good texts in already. John Daly making an appearance here on the text. And Babe Ruth as well. Shout out to Pappy. Shout out to the 469. You have Charles Barkley getting a nomination. You have Big Poppy. I mean, all these are hitting the nail right on the head, according to the list that I have here in front of me. Who comes to mind when you think of out-of-shape athlete? Still a beast, though. Still awesome. Not just out-of-shape and sucks, because we're honoring Luke with this. He's still a beast, but out-of-shape.
I mean, the most I'd ever seen was Arvydas Sabonis, the great Soviet center, played with the Trailblazers, got hurt before that epic Game 7, Mavericks Trailblazers in like 2003, 2004. So this guy was smoking cigarettes. He was probably 50 pounds overweight. He would just kind of shuffle down the floor. You know, he'd play 22 minutes and he looked like he'd been on a Stairmaster for 3 hours.
I love that.
You know, but that he was so skilled and massive, he could just kind of like lean on people and throw behind the back passes, and pretty impressive.
I thought of Bartolo Colon.
Big sexy.
The big pitcher. And then, would you consider Donovan McNabb kind of a.
Yeah, I like that.
Athlete?
I like that. Yeah, pear shaped for sure. Yeah.
I mean, like a guy that, like, the ball handling stuff and the way he was throwing the ball, the way he moves around for being a big guy.
Midsection was certainly prominent.
Yeah, you kind of think that. I always kind of thought of him like looking, but I'm like, man, it's incredible how he moves around being.
He was a good athlete.
The way he is, yeah.
Who comes to mind for you, Lucius?
It had to be Mike Tyson. He was, at one point in time, he's just washed up on liquor and alleged cocaine, hanging out all night, partying and everything, and he'll still go on there and knock you out in the fight. And then, and after the fight, he'll just say, I didn't even train for that fight.
I pray that he's okay.
Yeah,
David Wells, I think, was legendarily. Yeah. I mean, Babe Ruth, who I believe David Wells once wore his hat on the mound in an official game.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Babe Ruth might be the original.
Yeah, we got some numbers on Babe Ruth here. The alleged daily consumption.
Oh, no.
Big hot dog guy.
Yeah. For Babe Ruth.
He was standing there looking at the rotisserie hot dog thing.
Yeah, he while he was double fisting hot dogs already.
Yeah.
Waiting for that third one to
waiting
pop
for
off.
A beer to be poured.
So, we'll get to Babe Ruth for sure here in just a second. We do have honorable mentions like Miguel Cabrera.
Oh, yeah.
It's a pretty good one.
Prince Fielder?
Yeah, Prince Fielder, absolutely.
I mean, there's a lot of baseball guys, because if you could hit, they'd let you trot slowly around the bases.
Definitely, dude.
Should have been a triple, but we'll take it.
Tony Gwynn, Jerome Bettis, all honorable mentions.
I tell you, I mean, if you want to go baseball player who was badly out of shape but somehow could still just fly with the best athletes, was Kirby Puckett.
You know, dude's going up on the wall in the World Series at maybe 5'9", 230 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, he was definitely on the he came in the 20s on this list, but definitely makes an appearance here. Pablo Sandoval as well as another.
See the panda?
Honorable mention.
Is his nickname the panda?
I think you're right. I'm going to just rock with that.
Okay, 5'8". He was 165 pounds as a freshman in college. Retired just south of 300 pounds. And it was glaucoma that made him retire, too. It wasn't his weight.
Yeah.
Wow.
Warren Sapp, honorable mention, Ben Roethlisberger, one. Ben Roethlisberger was very, very bloated and homeless looking by
Dawson,
the end.
Dawson's probably seen, I don't know if you know this guy, Eric, Sebastian Janikowski.
Oh, yeah, he's on the list here. I definitely know him. Absolutely, I know him. He comes in at number 11, actually, just on the outside looking in.
I remember like fat kicker dudes.
Definitely the fattest kicker in NFL history, right?
Yeah.
Cecil Fielder as well. Outside
Cecil,
looking in.
Cecil.
John Crook, CC Sabathia, and David Wells also almost breaching the top 10. But number 10, in this one, I'm not much of a boxing savant.
Your buddy
but
Tony Gwynn?
Yeah. He was an honorable mention.
I'm sorry about that.
George Foreman.
He's big and sloppy. That's why he's like hawking things to make sandwiches now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, dude. He's definitely
cook your burgers on this.
He's leaning into that big time. Quite a bit here.
Sure did. Yeah. All his kids, George, too, by the way, even the girls, Georgina and everything.
Yeah. And
poor babies.
He made his comeback after going to be a preacher for like a decade. And he was in his 40s and, people didn't know that he was going to be good. And he was still one of the best. He kind of leaned back and put that belly out there. It was kind of like trying to rebound against a really heavy guy. Like the equator around him was just so big, you know, he could just stand back there and not get hit.
That's amazing.
And he was very skilled with his hands, even though he barely moved. And he made his way all the way back to the top.
George Foreman, number 10 on the greatest out-of-shape athletes in sports history. Big Poppy, David Ortiz coming in at number 9. Vince Wilfork at number 8.
Yeah, he can dump.
Yeah.
You get all that big old belly up there. You're strong. Them legs are strong as hell.
Giant, giant human being. And that's something to consider, especially with some of the football players. It's like, he looks like an out-of-shape dude, but he's strong as an absolute ox. Prince Fielder comes in at number 7.
Yeah.
Big Prince.
Yeah. He be jiggling when he come around there. Come rounding around second. Yeah. Jiggle, 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 jiggle.
There's not any golfers on this list, are there?
Yeah, there's one legendary golfer.
Oh, John Daly.
Oh, you got Daly on this list?
Daly's going to be on this list.
I thought say Jack Nicklaus was.
Nicklaus was actually an honorable mention.
Was he?
Yeah, he was down
did
on
you
the
mention
list,
him?
But he was there. No, I did not.
Okay, I thought. Okay, sorry.
Shaquille O'Neal. Mm. Don't tell Patrick Dumont. Shaq comes in at number 6.
Yeah, I mean, early Shaq in Orlando was incredibly fit.
Yes.
Shaq at LSU was really fit.
But he had to gain like 7 pounds a year or so. Yeah. I mean, by the time he was in Miami, he was like 100 pounds overweight.
Oh, yeah. I think he was playing at like 415 pounds at times.
Wow.
Really ballooned after some of those championships. And that's why Kobe was so frustrated. The refrigerator, William Perry, number 5. Great call.
They had a sit-down conversation with Shaq on one of these ESPN interview shows a couple weeks ago. And he was sitting down like in a silhouette was cast around him, like it was just his shadow. And I thought, that's weird. Why do they have one of those big green egg smokers sitting out in the middle of a studio? Like the way he was sitting, it was just like a giant egg.
Looking at him next to Kevin Hart during the All-Star festivities was just truly incredible. Yeah. Bartolo Colon, Big Sexy, comes in at number 4.
There you go.
Charles Barkley.
The round mound of rebound.
That's right. Number 3, you have John Daly at 2.
Mm.
That's warranted.
Yeah.
And number 1.
Oh, man. Hold on. We don't have the big O on this list? Oliver Miller, bro?
The really big O?
That's a great question, man. I'm scrolling and I am not seeing him pop up here.
Legendary.
Big baby, Glenn Davis.
He got big. Like he had an eating disorder of some sort.
Big Baby has been texted in quite a bit.
Felton. What's that?
Raymond Felton.
Raymond Felton.
Oh, my goodness.
Biggest point guard in the league.
Holy smokes. I saw him at the AAC a couple years ago just at a Mavs game, and I had a double take. I couldn't believe what was happening. I really couldn't believe what I was witnessing.
I mean, Darren Williams ate himself out of the league too.
He sure did. Yeah, he sure did.
He got back into fighting though. He was I gotta do something, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, the golf wasn't
I gotta do something.
Quite making it happen for him.
Babe Ruth comes in at number one, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. And when I went to go look what his diet is alleged to be, it's a breakfast that consumes it's steak and potatoes, fried potatoes.
Yeah.
With a half dozen eggs. He washed it down with 4 cups of bourbon and ginger ale. That's just what he called
in the
breakfast.
Morning?
Yeah, this was breakfast.
We might have to try that bourbon breakfast and ginger ale. We're at the baseball game.
And yeah, ginger ale is for his belly. I'm telling you that right now.
Yeah, that was like
that was him trying to be smart.
This is like an Alka-Seltzer for him.
Burping a lot.
So he leaves the house like legally intoxicated a lot of days.
Correct. Yes.
Or he's coming in
and he's going to play baseball.
Going to play baseball, but not before he has lunch.
Which, Ruth, course, you're drunk again.
2 more steaks.
Shut up, General. I'm going to drink as much as I want. I'm a Yankee.
That's why he told the kid at the hospital he's going to hit 2 home runs for him.
Ah, kid, you're asking too much, but I'll do it.
What the hell?
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, only a drunk would make a promise like that. Don't worry about it, kid.
Don't worry about it, kid. I'll drink about 7 bottles of booze before I get up to the plate. We'll be good.
Yeah, 2 steaks for lunch, 2 steaks for dinner, and sometimes for a treat, he would throw lamb chops on top of his steaks, because why not?
Lollipops.
And then he would snack on up to 12 hot dogs each and every day. Yeah. Like, this is ridiculous. 12 hot dogs after the amount of food that he's already ingested, and then as an after-dinner dessert. Dessert looked like chocolate ice cream and something I've never heard of before. Perhaps a bet payoff. Dawson still owes like 500. Pickled eels.
Oh my God.
That's disgusting.
As a dessert?
Yeah.
I've never brought us. I mean, you're our culinary guy.
Yeah.
Never heard of that in my life.
I've never eaten eel before.
Just eel out of a jar.
Yeah. Yeah. Pickled eels. Yeah.
That is an interesting dessert.
That's the great Bambino.
Ah, Ruth, you're eating the eels again. I could tell.
Yeah, a traditional English dish originated in the 18th century in East London.
He's chopped eels. So bad at it. I said that respectfully. This guy's so bad at it over there.
This guy's a Baltimore guy, man. Baltimore.
Chopped eel in a spice stock that's allowed to cool and set, forming a jelly.
A jelly. There you go.
Oh, my goodness. I feel like I'd have to throw up after reading that line.
This was in honor of Luca, and I think, given those names, I think Luca, when it's all said and done, he will be in the top 10.
Okay, speaking of basketball, we're going to go around the rim. Derek Lively news, as well as Anthony Davis update from earlier today. And, you know, we're getting ready for the Mavs to be back in action tomorrow, so we'll go give you a little bit of a rim session. What else do we have to tease, Chief?
Well, we also have the Wemby fallout with the blood clot stuff, what history says about the timeline for him, and why this could actually be good news for the Spurs. Hold on to your rear ends, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. Football's finest is coming up at 5 o'clock. We've gotten some somewhat encouraging news on a couple of different Mavs stories here today. Derek Lively out of the boot. He'll be reevaluated March 6th. Same day they're going to give updates on Gafford and Davis. So Mavs fans, mark that date, March 6th, for updates on 3 of your bigs. And if we get them back before the end of the season, I think the chances of a championship are legitimate. Okay, so I'm super hopeful on that. Maybe there can be at least a good short-term end to this story. That'd be something. But here's the Chief with that afternoon rim session you've been waiting for.
Yes, sir. Let's go ahead and put the kids to bed. It's well, we cut the lights out first, then we put the kids to bed, and then the G-Bag Nation goes all 56 inches around that rim. Always a special occasion when Luka and the Lakers are the only ones in the association playing. And, man, did you see what LaMelo Ball did late in that game?
That was slick.
It was hunting Luka defensively trying to take advantage of him in a big way. And then it all culminates in LeBron James, who had a great fourth quarter, missing not one but 2 go-ahead threes at the buzzer. And the Lakers end up losing that game. So, off to a rocky start there for Luka and the Lakers, and it looks like he is going to be now put on ice a little bit. Luka is, as he still recovers from the calf issue. I believe that they are confident that the recovery process is all well and dandy, but they will be holding out Luka tonight in Portland as part of the recovery for long-term calf injury. So that's where things stand with Luka and the Lakers right now.
Wow. You know, I am willing to overlook like his early scoring outputs and the poor defense that we're aware of, even though some Mavs fans are in denial about how bad of a defender that he is.
Tore up last night.
Yeah. But if this injury thing, plays out and is a long term concern for him, I feel like Nico's got to be like, hey, what's that I hear? You know, how are those Fire Nico chants going right now? Wow. That would be something else if it's proven long term. And we see in sports all the time, the longer you wait something out, you know, things start to make a little bit more sense. What if they felt like with their medical staff, like this isn't going to be, you know, a good situation here with this calf. This is more of a long-term type of deal that we got to get over.
Well, then it certainly justifies wanting to move on from him more so than maybe we had originally thought, but it doesn't necessarily excuse bringing in an older, more often injured player to Anthony Davis. That's the part that you'll never really be able to justify.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yes, if they are correct on their assessment of Luka's health, that it's deteriorating and he's going to be breaking down Kawhi and Joel Embiid style, then it wasn't the wrong choice to try and move on from him. But the way you went about it and how you got him and the PR disaster that you've created since just will never really be able to be remedied. Yeah. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you do have Jason Kidd saying that P.J. Washington practiced fully today and is questionable for tomorrow's game against the Pelicans. You mentioned the big men. Anthony Davis going to be reevaluated. Derek Lively reevaluated on March 6th. And that'll be a big update when it comes to really just the status of the rest of the season, because so much hinges on Anthony Davis and Derek Lively's health. So at that point, early March, we might have a better idea of where this thing's actually headed. Do we have a shot in hell at advancing in the postseason at all, or just getting there?
Yeah. I think they'll get there. What do they have to win? 16 more games, maybe 17 more games to be above 500. I think 17 would put them at 42-40, or maybe even 43-39. And I think the quality that they have here with Kyrie Irving, especially when you get PJ Washington back from the sprained ankle, that's going to be enough to snipe off some wins here and there. There might be some low spots, and I bet, you know, we might have to sweat it out a little bit.
Yeah.
But the fact that Anthony Davis is going to avoid, it appears, a bigger injury that they might have been holding off on telling us about, and that it's possible Lively and Gafford could be returning at the end of the year, I don't think anybody can match up. Like, we talk about OKC's defense, and it's historically good. It really is. With their speed and length and awareness and defensive skill at all their different positions, the Mavs do that, but they're taller. They're going to be able to put, you know, so many great rebounders and shot blockers out there. I feel like that Saturday game where we saw the three quarters of Anthony Davis was just a teaser of what's to come. And one of the most, you know, skilled, size, athletic, defensive performances that you're going to see at any era in the NBA, I think is what the potential of this group is.
Yeah, that's all very real, but so is just the general fragility of all these guys.
And yeah, especially Lively and Davis. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then the wear and tear on Kyrie that they're going to put on him to be a one-man wrecking crew offensively over the course of the next month or so. So it's going to be tough sled no matter what. Even if they get all these guys back and you're technically healthy going into the postseason, you're one play away from it all crumbling down on you. Now, the big news in the NBA today is the report out of San Antonio having to shut down Wemby because they discovered a post All-Star break blood clot in his shoulder. Very, very random. And apparently he had been feeling extra fatigued over the last week or so. And they never really got better. The Athletic says that he had low energy All-Star weekend and through his 2-day vacation after that. So they were like, wow, all right, well, let's do some tests here. And that's when they uncovered the deep vein thrombosis that he has, which is a blood clot, and he's going to be on blood thinners for the next 6 months. So what does that mean? Well, here's Brian Windhorst of ESPN telling you about the history of players in the NBA that have dealt with this and what is the likely outcome.
There is a bit of a history in the NBA of players having blood clots. It happened just a year ago to Asar Thompson, who was a rookie with the Detroit Pistons at the time. It does basically shut you down for 6 months. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're a civilian, you're an NBA player. The medication you have to go on shuts you down for 6 months. I had a blood clot 15 years ago. 6 months, you can't play contact sports. In the case of Asar Thompson, he was cleared to play by early November, returned at the end of November, and has been having a great recovery for the Pistons. Wemby's blood clot was in his right shoulder. You sometimes do see blood clots in the upper arms of athletes. This happened to Brandon Ingram about 6 years ago when he was with the New Orleans Pelicans. He had to go down for, you know, to get to treatment and make sure he was safe for about 6-7 months, return the following season, and has not had that issue recur. So if indeed, you know, the big thing about blood clots is you have to treat it right away. You are going to be out for a period of time. That's why they know he's out for the season. But then you have to determine what causes it. If it's something that's recurring, like what happened with Chris Bosh, it's a career-threatening condition. If it's something that as a result of an injury or a blow or some coming off a surgery or something, and it's a one-off condition, which is what the Spurs believe, you can get it treated and move on with your career and never look back. And that's what everybody is hoping will be the case with Victor Wembanyama.
And people are remembering when David Robinson got hurt, so the Spurs were able to get Tim Duncan. And ooh, now everybody's looking at the Spurs with the opportunity. They have their own draft pick. They're well under 500 right now. And then they also have the Hawks unprotected first round pick as well. This is a pretty good draft class. So even if they don't get the number one overall pick, a lot of people are like, wow, they're going to go get Cooper Flagg, number one overall from Duke. That would be just an absolute nightmare for the rest of the league. But they have a couple of picks that are going to be lottery picks. Theirs and Atlanta's. They're going to be able to get a couple of good young pieces, and as long as Wemby's able to come back and everything's fine, then the future somehow gets even brighter for those bleep holes.
That would be something. You know, I think, you know, first of all, you think about Wembanyama and the long term potential implications of this. That's got to be terrifying, you know. So you hope the best for the guy, but it doesn't sound like it's a lock that this is not going to be career threatening.
I don't think it is a lock. Like Wendy was talking about, what's the root cause of this? And maybe they know that already, and so they feel good about the prospects of him getting back to 100%. Or maybe they're just extremely hopeful right now, and I don't know how long it takes to discover what the actual root of the problem is.
Yeah.
So everything sort of hinges on that. We remember what happened to Chris Bosh, of course.
I mean, but San Antonio has some nice, young, athletic, skilled scorers already.
Oh, yeah.
So you add two more in the top 10 to it, and this could be the springboard that they need to get back in the playoffs next year. I think it's been pretty disappointing this year from a team perspective. Obviously,
it has. Yes, yeah. But they make the move for De'Aaron Fox. You have Stephon Castles. Been really good. You go get a Cooper Flagg or one of these top 10 or two of these top 10 picks. It's going to be a nice little future there as long as Wemby ends up being okay.
Okay, we're going to jump into the Zach Martin story coming up next, right?
Yes, yeah, football's finest. We got the breaking news this hour that Zach Martin is officially retiring on his own accord, so we'll get into some of that. Would he have run it back one more year if he felt like the Cowboys were a true contender? 877-881-1053. That's next right here on The Fan.